Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And tonight, we talk about the hot movie of the summer, John Wick 3. The perfect way to kick off summer movie season.
I'd say it's maybe the hot movie of right now.
That's true. There's a lot of giant movies coming out this summer.
Yeah.
you're not wrong about that. I mean, Spider-Man's only a month away, for gosh sake. I mean, it's pretty huge. Or is it a couple of weeks away?
I don't know.
Anyway, I think it's the beginning of June, so yeah, only a couple of weeks away. I'm very excited, as you can imagine. But anyway, before we get there, we have some random crap to go through, which I will start off with recommending. This is going to sound off-brand for me. A book.
Yeah, because you hate to read.
I famously hate to read. It's one of the things people know best about me. But anyway, I noticed on the shelf that I've often talked about my love of Yes Minister. And years ago, I had bought the script book for that. And I had enjoyed it. And I went back and I looked at it. And only this time did I realize just what an impressive job they'd done. Because rather than just doing it as a script book for the series, the two writers took it and reformatted everything that happened in the series as the main characters' diaries, right? And it's like that, essentially, the idea is that 30 years after the end of the series, this the family of this now-dead main character has let his diaries be published, and someone has gone through his diaries, which include the dialogue from the series, and various other government documents to put it, like, together a full ministerial and then prime ministerial diaries. And I'm like, this is the most innovative thing since Laura Palmer's diary, as just a tie-in for a TV show to add depth to it. And it kind of blows me away that I, you know, did not respect it as much the first time I read it. So, Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister, the complete diaries, they're available on Amazon. And even if you don't like the show, it's still a good comedic read.
Okay.
So check that out. Next up, television.
I just discovered there's a hole in my shirt.
And who stars in that? I'm just like, is that made by somebody famous?
Or? That's upsetting. Aw, what a bummer. Now I'm really distracted by this hole in my shirt. Yeah, so TV, I told you this earlier. The Gun Wrangler and I just started watching Girls in Panzer, and it's amazing.
You're welcome. Yeah, Girls in Panzer is something I've been covering for a full year. It's my favorite anime.
I really think it is.
Yeah, isn't it? It's super adorbs. You're halfway through the season. I hate to disappoint you, but the entire show is one season, a couple of video shorts, one movie, and now a second season. But the kick is, the second season is being released as one-hour movies over 6 years.
Oh.
So, yeah. So you watch the first episode, and they're like, I enjoyed that first episode. Yeah, next year you can have the second episode. And then, so it's still going to be another 12 episodes worth of content. It's just going to be aired over 6 years.
I don't know if I'm going to stick with it, because that's a lot to ask of someone.
I know. I don't know why they're doing it this way. It seems crazy and frustrating to me, but that's what they've decided to do. I'm happy that there's more Girls in Panzer content, and I can confirm that the first episode of Das Final, the first hour of it, was fantastic. And I'm very much looking forward to the second hour next week. So after you finish the show and the movie, you can decide whether you want to watch the extra content. But yeah, it is a lot to ask from fans to check in once a year for 1 hour.
Well, there's another show I actually wanted to talk about that I found called Anime Crimes Division.
What?
And it is amazing. So,
based on that title, I have no idea what I'm about to hear about. So
it's a live action show. You can watch it all on YouTube.
Okay.
But I found it on Crunchyroll.
Nice.
And the episodes are like 8 minutes long, something like that. Okay. So it's live action and it's set in New Otaku City.
All right.
And it's this police division, I suppose, that deals with crimes against anime.
Okay.
Or crimes that resemble anime in some way. So, like, someone's going around murdering Gundam statues. Or, like, Gundam toys. someone's defaced a statue. in a park and written subs, not dubs, on it. So there's like a gang war between the subs and the dubs. Like, it's that kind of stuff.
Well, we all know what side we're on, but wow. And
it is so good. So you can find it online, Anime Crimes Division. You will not be disappointed. It's okay. So great. And it has like really good production values for like an 8-minute show.
All right. Oh, Anime God. Crimes Division, and this is available on Crunchyroll and on YouTube.
Very funny. Yes.
Okay. I will remember to check that out because that sounds amazing. All right. For me, I'm going to just recommend people what I always do at every season of Barry. Just watch Barry. You owe it to yourself to watch Barry. It is technically billed as a comedy, but it is one of the best dramas on television. Bill Hader is going to win all of the Emmys again this year. I wanted to keep from recommending it until we got to the final episode, so I didn't, you know, made sure they didn't screw it up at the last minute. But no, I shouldn't have doubted them. It was last year's best TV show. This year is 100% better than last year was. Like, it really ended on an incredible note, and I can't wait to see where it goes next. But yeah, just a fantastic job from Bill Hader and Alec Berg and everyone who work on the show. Just an amazing piece of work. And I think everyone should check it out. You owe it to yourself to see something as good as Barry Season 2.
Do you want to repeat yourself one more time about that?
Nope.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? I will. You're going to find it touching. You're going to find it incredibly dramatic. There's some heartbreaking stuff in there. There's some genuinely incredibly tense moments. A little bit of brutal violence, but nothing is as viscerally hard to watch as the torture scene from the first season. So it's even more accessible than the first season was. Because I know people who are like, oh, okay, I can't watch someone get their teeth sawed out with a file.
Oh.
Yeah, that happened in the first season of Barry.
Jesus.
It's a hard show to watch sometimes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, but it's the best thing on TV. Also, Game of Thrones ends. I don't care.
We're not talking about that. We never will.
I just said I don't care, and then you decided to start talking
why
about
it. Why did you even bring it up?
I just said it's over and we don't care. I don't know
why even bother mentioning that?
One of us is continuing to talk about it, and it's you. So you should look into your own issues about Game of Thrones, obviously.
In the first place.
Hey, I said it was over, and you're like, we've got to talk about this Game of Thrones thing.
I never once said that.
That's exactly what's happening right now.
Because we've never once mentioned it. Why mention it now?
Good question. You're the one doing it.
Oh, that's you. That's you.
Okay. Anyway, so yeah, that's pretty good, though. I'm glad it's over. So, moving on, we have...
a movie.
Ooh, I love those.
So, I started watching this movie, and I don't think I'm going to finish watching it.
Oh, no.
It's called Alien Warfare.
I love that your, I don't think I'm going to watch it, kind of serves as a review in and of itself, but I do want to hear why. What is Alien Warfare?
Because I'm watching this film, and the whole time I'm like waiting for the plot to start.
Oh no.
I think I got like half an hour into it, and it's all like the plot, this film has started, the story is being told, and I still feel like I'm waiting for something.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
It's a weird feeling to have because everything's laid out for you right at the start. And they're not Marines. Special Forces. I think they're like a Special Forces unit. Okay. And so, like some secret military facility has gone offline. So they're sent in to find out what's going on. It's like, and retrieve the package for us. And they're like, what's the package? And it's like, yeah, you'll know it when you see it. Like the CIA sends them in to their like black site.
You'll know some, it. You see it.
Yeah, and it's this weird alien, like bit of alien technology.
Right.
And everybody has disappeared except for the one woman who was like locked in the Faraday room when the tech did whatever it is that it does.
Yeah.
And so like we are like well into the story here, and I'm like, I still feel like I'm waiting for something to happen.
I feel like I saw this advertised on, what is on, Prime, Crave, Netflix?
Prime.
Okay, I feel like I saw this thing advertised on Prime. I don't know why, but I remember footage of a bunch of Special Forces guys in a room, and then, like, there being a lady there, and them shooting at something.
Yeah.
So yeah. Okay. This is probably the same movie that I saw a tiny ad for, but it did not look impressive. And it's like, wow. So you're just not even bothering to finish it.
I don't think so.
Oh.
Yeah. I care enough, really.
Yeah. No, I respect that. Like, you've got to draw the line somewhere.
Right. And I'll watch anything.
Famously. So. You will famously watch almost anything.
It's saying a lot when I'm like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to keep watching.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's so sad, but I totally understand why you would just, you got to stop somewhere. Yep. I get it. Totally get it. All right. So I believe you have a list for us.
I do.
Love it when that happens.
So this week's list is the 20 best action movies ever made.
Ooh.
And this is Men's Health.
Journalistic entity, Men's Health.
Men's Health.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where you go to get all your movie news.
Jesus.
So this list is from February 2019.
Okay.
And we are counting up from one. So I don't know if
Arthurial intent is going in. One. I think they're just listing 20 movies that they think are awesome. I don't think this is ranked in a specific way. I could be wrong, but the fact that it's starting with one and going to 20 suggests it's someone who doesn't know how lists work, so I'm going to avoid suggesting that there's authorial intent behind that numbering.
Like any kind of value statement? Yeah,
exactly. There's nothing. No, it's just like, no, there is no intent, unless it's by... Unless it's alphabetical or by year, I think no thought went into what order they go in.
No, it's neither alphabetical nor chronological.
Yeah. It would be great if the list actually, if I'm wrong, and the first thing he says is, the best movie of all time. And he starts with one, and then is like going less good movies after that.
Yeah, why would you want to read? Like, it's like, I got what I came here for.
It would be even better if he, like, while doing that, kept unfavorably comparing each subsequent movie to the first movie. It's not as good as the movie I already told you to watch, but here's something else you might like.
Uh-huh.
But I have a feeling that's not what we're going to get.
Okay. I guess, well, I'll just start then. Number one, First Blood.
Not a great action movie. Oh. Like, good drama, almost no action. Like, really intense drama, good acting showcase for Sylvester Stallone. And I get why it spawned, like, why you'd want to see more from this character, but not a particularly good action movie.
I also don't know how to read this word. He writes here, so John Rambo was just a scared veteran trying to survive out in the real world. I think he means scarred.
Yeah, he definitely means scarred.
So, off to a great start.
Well, I mean, there's that famous moment in the what was the movie? I'm trying to remember the movie where it was supposed to be Sacred Heart Hospital, and they screwed up the sign and it says Scared Heart Hospital.
Oh no!
I'm like, oh, so close. It can happen to anybody. But anyway, keep going.
All right, number two, Kill Bill Volume 1.
That's a pretty good movie.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely better than Volume 2, because there's no real awesome fights in Part 2. And there's
Volume
2
is a different kind of movie than Volume 2.
A completely different kind of movie, yeah. No, you're totally right. I mean, I just, like, when you, of all of them, yeah, you've got to pick Part 1. For the best fights, because...
Well, if you're going for action, maybe, yeah. I mean, yeah. Part 2 has the fight in the trailer, which is amazing. Yeah.
Oh, no, I love her fight with Elle in Part 2, but I'm just saying, you put that against the kitchen fight and the giant samurai battle in the first one, it's going to come up short. Like,
yeah. And the fight at the end is just really anticlimactic, really.
And I know it's designed to be anticlimactic, but it's still anticlimactic. Like, the fact that you meant it to, you know, leave us feeling eh... doesn't change that leaves us feeling eh.
I don't think that makes you a good filmmaker.
I mean, except to the extent that he got the response he wanted out of his audience. Although, as you said, it's not piss off your audience.
Why would you want to do that?
You have often said it's not hard to piss off your audience. So why are you choosing to do
it? And there's no point in doing it. Are you trying to make a point? If so, it's lost on all of us because we're too angry.
Oh, God, you're so right. Oh, man. All right. So next up.
Number three, The Raid 2, Redemption.
Okay.
I thought The Raid was...
The Raid is... he's thinking The Raid Redemption. It's The Raid 2, Burrendal.
No, he wrote Raid... No, he means Redemption.
Yeah.
But he wrote Raid 2, Redemption, assuming that The Raid Redemption was, in fact...
A sequel. It's not. In fact, the guys have talked about how calling it The Raid Redemption, they didn't want to add that subtitle because it made it sound like it was a sequel.
Oh, but no, maybe for whatever he does mean
Meant Burrendal?
Okay, I'm going to read.
Please.
The Raid was more frenzied, but the sequel got Burrendal. Grand. Introducing an intricate crime drama plot. Didn't matter. Redemption is brilliantly violent, a ballet of broken bones, perfect punches, and crazy car chases.
Yeah, no, he's talking about Burrendal. He's just gotten confused.
He got confused with the names.
Yeah. Which is reasonable, because as the people who made The Raid said, it's confusing to have a subtitle like that. It makes it sound like a sequel.
It really does.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Number four, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation.
Nope. No, you gotta go. No, I would put Fallout over Rogue Nation.
I don't think Fallout.
Fallout wasn't out yet. Okay. Then in that case, yes, okay. Rogue Nation is a masterpiece of action. But, and I love it. I mean, you can listen to us gush about it for an hour if you want. It's incredible. Yeah. It's a beautiful film. And what I loved about it was it's like, why is the action in this so amazing? Oh, they hired everybody from John Wick. Now I understand why the action is so amazing.
Yep.
Like, you just get the John Wick guys to do your stunts. It'll be perfect. But yeah, no, if Fallout wasn't out yet, then yeah, absolutely Rogue Nation is the best ever.
Yeah, Rogue Nation is great.
Yeah, no, for some reason, I thought this list was from this year, but you said it was from 2018. I apologize. Rogue Nation is incredible.
It's from February 2019.
Oh, it is from this year. Oh.
But I don't
You know what? Maybe Fallout will be later on the list. I shouldn't.
Well, when did Fallout come out?
Last summer.
Okay.
Yeah, so
maybe
he
just hasn't seen it.
That's entirely possible. Okay.
Right?
But no, I mean, I don't want to, I want nothing I've said to in any way denigrate my love for, in any way denigrate Rogue Nation. It's incredible. I guess my first instinct was there's only going to be one Mission Impossible movie on the list. And if that's true, it should be Fallout.
Yeah, but you have to take into account who wrote the list, when they wrote it, and what movies they've seen.
That's absolutely right. Hopefully. And again, it still might show up later on the list. Who knows? What's next?
Number five. Well, get ready to be disappointed.
Oh, no.
The Bourne Ultimatum.
Oh, come on.
The only good Bourne movie is the first
one. Well, no, Supremacy's got a couple of good scenes. But the only one that's a good one is the first one. Supremacy has a couple of good scenes, and then Ultimatum is a remake of Supremacy. Like, what if we just make the same movie again? Are you sure you just want to make... Yes! We want to make the exact same movie again.
But they get more confusing because Ultimatum and Supremacy take place at the same time somehow.
I know.
And like, what's-her-face there has got the worst dye job ever in the history of cinema. And it's like, cover your fucking head, girl.
I know.
Everybody can see you with that awful dye job.
Well, and what's worse is that like they kill off Brian Cox in part two. And then it's like, so the giant showdown in the third movie is with a character we've never met before. I'm like, oh, come on, guys. What are you doing? Yeah, like this, you really botched this franchise quite badly. And it is crazy that, you're right, it is crazy that they've called Ultimatum the best one. Of the three of them, you're absolutely right. And by the way, I just remembered there's a fourth one. And a fifth one! There's actually five.
There are five Bourne movies.
Oh, that's terrible. Poor Jeremy Renner. But anyway, the thing about the third one is it's like you're just redoing all these scenes from two, and it's kind of worse, and the villain's not as interesting, and you've muddled up the timeline. Like, just such a disaster, that movie. Yeah, I don't know why, if you were going to mention Bourne, you wouldn't just say The Bourne Identity. There, we're done. It's an amazing movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't directed by Paul Greengrass, so the fights are coherent.
But even then, it's a little too much.
I mean, it did invent shaky cam, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did really popularize it, but it didn't do it to the excess that the next two Bourne movies did, which led to...
I saw this thing, and it was like a clip from the making of The Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
And they're filming one of the fight scenes and the cameraman gets right in there and he's moving the camera around. It's like, oh, just stop doing that.
So you were actually watching a cameraman get 5 inches from the action and shake it.
Yeah. What the fuck God. Are you doing?
That's the kind of thing that would make you want to like angrily turn off the special feature.
Well, it just makes you want to go over and slap them.
Oh, I know.
And just say no. Like I'm talking to a bad dog.
Oh God. Wow. Yeah. All right. No, that
That's
was
how I feel about intensified continuity. So
oh no. I mean, we've been very open about our feelings about intensified continuity. But it's just weird to hear you being so brutal about it. Well, you know what? You didn't call out his specific name or threaten his children, so I think that's, you know. When I check the books, I think that one's going to be fine. All right, next up.
Number 7, Enter the Dragon.
Okay, well, that's just one of the best kung fu movies ever made. I'm sad that Super Ninjas is going to show up on the list, but that's one of the best. Like, that's an amazing movie. Enter the Dragon is incredible. And it's still incredible to this day. Also, at one point, Bruce Lee kicks Jackie Chan.
Okay. I have nothing to add.
No, that just, it makes me happy. Okay. And I hope a Jackie Chan movie shows up in this, on this list. And if it doesn't, I'll tell you which one should have. Go.
Okay. Number 8, The Killer.
Oh, such a magnificent movie. The sad part is, you haven't seen The Killer? All right. Yeah. Well, we're not going to go too long into it. It's magnificent. You've seen Hard Boiled though, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just want to make sure you've seen the best one. But yeah, The Killer's great. It's wonderful. And honestly, that might be the movie with Scared Heart instead of Sacred Heart. I just...
No, because Sacred Heart is the hospital, right?
Yeah. And I think on one sign, they write, oh yeah, it might actually be Hard Boiled. So you're right.
It's either Hard Boiled, maybe A Better Tomorrow?
One of them. I think it might be in one of those movies that somebody got one of the signs wrong. So yeah. But anyway, The Killer's great, but how does he justify putting that on the list and not Hard Boiled?
John Woo's Hollywood career wasn't as sparkling or consistent as fans would have hoped, but his late 80s peak remains a glorious salute to melodramatic plotting and poetic shootouts. Chai Yun-fat made for a fierce, soulful assassin, and never forget, The Killer is where Woo began his obsession with dub-filled action scenes.
That is true. Oh man, but it's like, yeah, come on, Hard Boiled. Just because it was the first one to have dubs doesn't mean it's the one you should be talking about. All right, next up.
Number 9, Aliens.
Okay, nice. Oh, I love Aliens so much. Incredible action movie.
I know, but I lump it in with sci-fi usually.
Right, rather than pure action.
Yeah. Because it's an action sci-fi, like it straddles the line. So
completely. It is about Marines trapped doing an assault on Space Marines having an assault on Precinct 13 type adventure. So like I get why you would throw it in there, but at the same why you want to say sci-fi, but I would defend putting it on a pure action list too, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's okay to put that one on the list.
Yeah, I mean it's a great movie. So
I was watching a TV show recently, and Jeanette Goldstein was in it, and I just took a moment to think, how messed up is it, like, how comfortable people were in the 80s just casting whoever to play different ethnicities and putting them in brownface and having them do an accent? So weird. Like, that is a strange thing that I'm glad has ended, and I don't know why it took as long to end as it did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so crazy. All right, next up.
Number 10, Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay, well, it's the best action movie ever made, so we're not going to debate that.
But depending on which way, like, this is right in the middle. Depending on whether we're counting down or counting up, it should be closer to the top. I know.
Yes, it should be the first or the last movie on the list. Whatever you were trying to say with the list, that's how it should be.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I mean, we've been open about the fact that that's probably the best action movie ever made. I mean, so there's nothing wrong with it. It's just perfect from beginning to end. Did you ever get around to watching the black and white version?
No.
I did. It's beautiful.
Oh, okay.
So if you just want to have a good experience, the black and white version is amazing.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Go. Number 11, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah, wonderful movie.
Yep.
Like, just a wonderful action film, really great, in, you know, introduced wire work, classical wire work, not wire work overall, that was The Matrix, to Hollywood, but just a really, really beautiful film, looks great, great story, great action, like, all, like, hitting on all fronts, even television, way to go, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yep. Number 12, Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
You know, for a long time, I thought the Terminator, I mean, like, years and years of my life, I'm like, they're never going to make a better action movie than Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
And then Mad Max Fury Road.
Then Max Fury Road happened, exactly. Like, but that's what it took. I've said this before, but that is the film I have seen most often in theaters in my life. I saw that 6 times that summer.
Wow.
I'm like, it's, I don't know that you'll ever see a better paced movie than that. I'll never see, like, every part of it works. The acting, the direction, the pacing. It's beautifully written. Like, it's so beautifully written that as a nerd, I don't even care that they changed the rules of time travel from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I still to this day say, oh my God, if only they had just ended it with the happy ending and killed that franchise dead there, it would go down in history as one of the greatest film franchises of all time, rather than a franchise with 2 amazing movies and a ton of crap ladled on top afterwards.
I don't think it can be a franchise with only 2.
Okay, then it wouldn't even be called a franchise. It'd just be like, these are the 2 best movies I've ever seen.
Right? It's like, what's a serial killer? 2 or more? Or 3 or more?
You're right. So you can't call it a franchise if there's only 2 of them. Oh, God. Robert Patrick in that movie. Oh, he's so magnificent.
It's the perfect sequel.
It is. It is the perfect sequel. Yeah. And take that, Scream 2. Randy trying to say it's not a better movie. It's a better movie. All right. You know what? So, but then again, Timothy Oliphant's right too. Godfather Part 2 is also a better movie. All right. Next up.
Number 13, Bullet.
Oh, God. I haven't seen Bullet since I was a kid, so I can't really weigh in on this one, but it's historically important for having history's first modern car chase.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the first car chase, you know, like, that had ever appeared in a film. So I get why it's historically important. Is it really a great action movie other than that one car chase?
I have no idea. I've never seen it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I have. I just don't remember there being a ton of other action in it. And you know what? You know what people don't call one of the best action movies ever made? The French Connection. And it also has an incredibly good car chase. So it's like, historically important, yes, but I think it's a little weird to call it one of the great action movies of all time. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. I'll rewatch it, but I mean, it's like, what, 1968 or something?
68. It says here, yes, the car chases are as amazing as you've heard, but what's striking today is how well this holds up as a cop procedural. But that, yeah, this is a movie about, this is a list about action movies, not cop procedural.
You're right. It doesn't belong on the list. I'm right. It's a cop procedural with an amazing car chase. Okay. There you go. And I mean, it's an amazing car chase. You can just go to YouTube and watch the car chase if you want. It's fantastic.
But doesn't he lose 5 hubcaps?
Yes, he does lose 5. Every time they do a jump, a hubcap goes flying off and they do a lot of jumps.
More hubcaps than there are wheels on the car.
I'm sure they bolted some back on during the chase. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay. Next up.
Number 14, The French Connection.
No! What? How did I do that to myself? I can't believe. Okay, once again, really good police procedural that happens to have an amazing car chase. It's not an action film. Let's move on.
Number 15, Seven Samurai.
I mean, it's an amazing... Ooh. It's weird. Is it crazy that I don't want to put samurai movies and westerns in with action films?
Well, if you're going to unclude samurai movies and westerns, then you have to do the same for sci-fi.
You're right. Okay, so let's just let him have the Seven Samurai. I think it's weird, but I think Yojimbo's a better movie. But Seven Samurai is incredible.
Yeah.
I would put Yojimbo over the Seven Samurai if you're talking Kurosawa action movies. But, I mean, Seven Samurai is amazing. So, yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Put it on the list. We're not cutting things off unless they don't feature a lot of action, which all of those do. So, yeah. Let's let them have this one.
All right.
Actually, there hasn't been a Western yet, has there?
Nope.
Weird. All right, please.
Number 16, Heat.
Oh, okay. I don't really think of that as an action movie.
Me neither.
Like, it's got that one really good gunfight and chase, and a couple of people other than that get shot, but no, I mean, you have to have so much more action than that, like, just by running time, to call yourself an action film.
Yeah.
Like, think of how many action set pieces there are in Aliens. There's a ton, and the last 45 minutes of that movie is just this unendingly intense action sequence. So even there's a lot of talking and a lot of quiet moments, a lot of tension building, there's a ton of action in that movie. There's not a ton of action in this.
Yeah.
I don't think that one really counts either.
Yeah.
All right, go.
Number 17, The Matrix.
Aww.
Great movie. Well, we just talked all about it.
We just did a whole thing about how how insane it is that it's the 20th anniversary of The Matrix and they didn't do theatrical releases.
Right, nobody seems to care.
Nobody cares. They didn't do theatrical re-releases. It's one of the best action movies ever made. And people have just, like, allowed themselves to forget it. It's disgusting. But The Matrix is perfect in its own way. Go watch The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Number 18, Die Hard.
Okay, I really think he is counting up to what he thinks is best.
Okay. I just found out that the Mayfair shows Die Hard every year.
What?
At Christmas, obviously. So obviously.
Well, we know what we're doing next Christmas.
I have to start doing that, because yeah. I watch it at home every year at Christmas. Now I can go to the movies.
We're going to the movies. We are absolutely 100% going to the movies to watch, like, Die Hard next year. There's no question. Yes. Yeah. New thing. We're doing that. Full stop.
Yeah.
Oh. The best movie. No, but it's like, I really think he's trying to make a judgment, in which case, yeah, Mad Max is in the wrong place. Go.
Number 19, The Dark Knight.
Oh, no. I know other people like that movie more than I do. I think it is meandering and takes way too long and has like five acts and is two movies awkwardly stapled together, right? But Even as someone who loves that movie, you would agree with me that it's not one of the best action movies ever made.
No, I do love this movie. I think it has one of the best beginnings of any movie ever.
Oh God, yeah.
And the car chase scene is really good.
Magnificent.
But it's like
beyond that.
Yeah,
beyond those two scenes,
Don't think I would ever consider it on a list of best action movies.
No, I mean. Honestly, like, it has one of the best openings ever. The only opening I prefer in a superhero movie is the opening to The Dark Knight Rises with Bane's awesome attack on an airplane.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, but the whole heist at the opening of this movie is incredible. Beautifully shot, beautifully paced, so funny, so brutal. Like, it's an amazing sequence, a heart-stopping, great sequence. And it's like, I love that he didn't shoot the movie in IMAX. He just shot that scene in IMAX because he knew what he had, you know? Like, I love that so much about that scene. But yeah, like, no, I don't think it belongs in the conversation if we're talking best action movies of all time. Hell, this list doesn't even feature super ninjas.
Well, we're down to the last one. Do you want to guess what this is?
Well, obviously, it's obviously Three Ninjas Kick Back. Duh.
Do you want to make a real guess?
Okay, a real guess. What hasn't been on the list? I kind of want it. I mean, do you know what I honestly... Dude, the sad part is, do you know what I want it to be?
What?
I want it to be Lethal Weapon. And I know it's not. It's just Lethal Weapon doesn't get into this conversation the way it should, because it is one of the few movies that completely works as a hardcore action movie and really works as a cop drama at the same time. And it's so good. It's like great drama, great mystery. It's like it checks all the boxes and the action is incredible. Like, and it just doesn't get into these conversations and it makes me sad. I know the real number one is Tango and Cash.
Number 20.
Sorry.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, okay. Now I feel like a moron. All right, you
win.
Again,
but when I'm thinking action movies.
No. An adventure movie.
It's an adventure, yeah.
There's a difference. And it's like, we would have to talk for 10 minutes to explain the difference between an action movie and an adventure movie. But it exists.
Yes. And
it is an adventure movie. It's not an action movie.
Yeah.
No.
Agreed.
All right. I'm right there with you.
So that's it. Men's health with the definitive list.
The thing about Men's Health's list is there's actually a lot of really good titles on there. He just got his terms confused in a bunch of places, and he doesn't understand that you're supposed to be counting down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I can make the argument that maybe Indiana Jones is the best single movie ever made, but I still wouldn't call it the best action movie of all time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's about saying, what is the genre, and how good are you at the genre? And Die Hard's a better action movie than Indiana Jones. Even though Indiana Jones has the truck chase. You know, one of the single greatest action set pieces of all time. That doesn't make it an action movie. And if you want to know why, rewind. We already went through that on Bullet.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, I got to say, I don't know what I was expecting for Men's Health, but they did a lot better than I thought they were going to. All right, next up.
You're right.
I don't know why I thought there was going to be another entry. I'm embarrassed. Yes, but the thing is, action movies are all great and all, but we're here to talk horror, and mm-hmm. It makes me wonder, are they still making those?
Turns out they are, because this week's upcoming horror movie is called The Cleaning Lady. Okay, stop me when this sounds familiar.
Okay.
On the surface, Alice seems like a woman who has it all. A gorgeous apartment, a booming career, a stunning physique, and a handsome boyfriend. The only problem is he's married to someone else. Looking for a way to simplify her life, Alice hires Shelley to clean her house. As Alice begins to confide in Shelley about her illicit affair, their friendship grows, and so does Shelley's twisted obsession with her new employer. It soon becomes clear that Shelley has motives that reach further than normal cleaning lady. Shelley wants to cleanse Alice's entire life and will stop at nothing until she's done.
So they've remade Single White Female again?
Exactly what it sounds like.
They keep remaking that movie.
I don't understand. If you're looking to simplify your life, why hire a cleaning lady?
Maybe they left out the fact that she's also a hoarder. Like, maybe they left that part of the story out.
It's just not sexy.
I don't understand why you think that having a cleaning lady is going to simplify your life, unless you're spending a ton of time every week cleaning your house.
I feel like ditching the boyfriend is a way to simplify her life.
Well, that's probably... Well, or, you know, murder the boyfriend's wife.
Also, see, like, if she'd hired Shelley to murder the boyfriend's wife,
then I would understand how she's there to simplify the life. Yeah, yes, absolutely. But no, hiring a cleaning lady does not simplify your life. It just cleans your house.
If you've got this great career and all, why are you at home while your cleaning lady is there cleaning your house? Shouldn't you be at work?
Oh God, this has gotten into some really sad territory, because it makes it seem like a Jupiter Rising situation where it's a privileged person who has like zero friends in her real life and is desperate for any female friends, so she has to hire one.
So she has a booming career.
No, booming career, but that doesn't mean you have any female friends.
Well, this is true, but at the same time, if her career is booming, wouldn't she be at work all the time, and that's why you don't have any female friends?
I've got it. Wait. I figured it out. She's a writer. She's home all the time. She's super successful and super high powered, but she's at home all the time. And that's why she ends up confiding in her. And because of the social, you know, the social isolation comes with writing, she also doesn't have any friends, which is why she needs to confide just in her cleaning lady.
Right.
There. That's what the movie's about. And if not, they should have hired us to fix it.
That is so sad.
I know. Is anyone of note in this?
Not to me at any rate.
No one whose name you recognize. Gotcha.
Co-written and directed by John Knotts, who made Jack Brooks' Monster Slayer.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that.
Based on the 2016 short film with the same name.
Oh, cool.
So.
Yeah, no, I'm always excited when people who make creepy horror short films find success in that. It's nice. The films rarely turn out well because, mm-hmm. you know, they generally haven't thought through the story enough to make it work at the hour, 2 hour mark. I'm looking at you, mama. but it is really nice when that happens, and more power to you, person who did that. I hope you got a nice paycheck out of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Keep your eyes peeled because it opens on June 4th.
Is it in theaters?
I'm sorry. No, it's...
Oh, okay.
Opens maybe is the wrong... Drops?
Drops is the preferred term, yes.
Yeah.
You really confused me there. I was trying to think, what was another one that was based on a short film that we saw? Oh, wait. Oh, no, I'm crazy. Was The Boy based on a short film?
I don't think so.
Okay. I feel like it's another... Ha, 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 yes. You know, the only boy movie people talk about, the one about the crazy wall monster.
That's getting a sequel.
How?
I covered this in upcoming
parts. I know.
2 weeks ago.
I remember. I'm just, every time I think about it getting a sequel, all I can think is, how?
It doesn't make any sense.
He's never been outside that house in his life, and people know there's a monster there now.
Yep.
All right. I'm just, you know, I'm baffled. Okay, we did watch a movie this week, and before we start talking about the movie, I gotta ask, did you see the Chucky trailer before the movie?
No. What trailers? Oh, okay. I saw a bunch, though. I saw another trailer for Hobbs and Statham.
Shaw? I don't remember. I don't care what you say. I'm too excited about that movie.
And it, like, I really wasn't that interested when I saw the first trailer, but then I saw this trailer, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm probably going to go see this.
Thank you. I'm so excited about this movie.
What other trailers did I see? I don't remember. There were like a lot of them too. It wasn't all car ads because I went to a different movie theater.
Oh, okay. God, so many car ads.
I saw the same car ad twice and that was it.
So here's something that happened to me. And this is something that I'm sure you've seen as well, that like the advertising trend that bothers me the most. Ads for the concept of going to the movies.
What?
There's this whole ad about like how much I love going to the movies and blah, 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 first kisses, blah, 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 remembering how much you like going to the movies with your dead father, blah, 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 seeing movies as a kid and growing up to be a filmmaker. And like these ads about like how great movies are. I'm like, bitch, I'm already here.
Right. Don't sell me shit I've already paid for.
Exactly. I just don't get it. I'm spending millions of dollars to make these ads. I'm like, air them on TV, morons.
Yeah,
they're the people you got to try to reach.
I got to say, I enjoyed the experience at Landmark much better than I've enjoyed Cineplex recently. So I might continue to make the schlep out to Kanata to go to Landmark.
It's a much nicer theater. Honestly, yeah. Cineplex is really... let things go. I mean, I went to see, I'm sure I mentioned on the Avengers show, but it started 25 minutes late.
Oh, really?
I guess I didn't. Yeah. I don't know what corporate is thinking over at Cineplex, but they did not put on any additional staff for the opening night of Avengers.
Wow.
It was playing on 5 screens, and they didn't think, yeah, we're going to need some more people here for this. So the place was messy as hell, and people kept, like, walking into theaters and trying to, you know, not pay for the movie.
Yeah.
And so, like, people had to keep coming in and escorting people out. Like, it was... And they're like, we're not going to start the movie until everyone who doesn't have a ticket is off here. And then, here's the kicker.
But it's assigned seating.
I know.
You're going to know if someone hasn't paid because someone else with the ticket for that seat is going to be like, you're in my seat. You got
to
go.
That's exactly what kept happening. And I'm like, dude, if you're trying to steal a seat in assigned seating, just go to the front. No one ever buys those tickets.
Yeah. Nobody wants to sit down there because it's awful. Terrible. It's a terrible experience.
It's an awful experience. And then the movie just didn't start for 10 minutes.
Or just don't try to fucking sneak into the biggest movie ever on opening night.
Yeah, it's a pretty dumb move. But yeah, so we were sitting there for 5 minutes in just a light lit theater with no movie, and then another 5 minutes in the dark, but the screen did not start up.
That's interesting because experience. I found out that all the Cineplex movie theaters in Ottawa, maybe across the country, but certainly in Ottawa, are controlled in Toronto.
Oh.
So the trailers, the start time, all that stuff is
done as a hub from their corporate
is
headquarters.
Is done from like a laptop in Toronto.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So ridiculous. I'm sorry. I know that they want to save bucks wherever they can, but this is terrible. All right. So Luckily, I had a much better experience watching John Wick.
Yes, so did we.
Oh my god. Oh, all right.
Because we drank a lot of beer before.
Well, that always helps. But anyway, get right to it. Synopsize away.
Okay, John Wick 3, Parabellum. Sorry, John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum.
There you go.
Picking him up immediately after the end of the second movie, John Wick has less than an hour before he becomes the target for all the assassins everywhere. Hoping to find a way to stay alive, he embarks on a journey that ultimately leads him to save the New York Continental.
Oh. All right, well, I'm just going to say it. This thing's magnificent.
Yes.
It is magnificent.
And it's much... Oh. It's. I don't know how you felt about this. It was... Funnier is the wrong way to phrase this, but funnier than the other.
No, it absolutely is. There is more... The action is far more playful this time.
Well, it's not so much... It's not the action so much as the some of the characters themselves are written to be funny.
That's like true as well.
The things they say are meant to be comedic.
Oh, yeah, no, there's actual jokes. You're right.
Out of the audience. I'm like, I don't... am I okay with this? Because it's
A big change for the franchise, which was unbelievably self-serious for the first two entries.
Yes.
Yeah, it absolutely was. But I was going to point out that opening fight scene that was, you know, just clearly done half comedically. Where he's fighting this giant guy. And it's still brutal, but they were like, this fight scene is all supposed to be a little funny.
I don't think so. I think the fact that he's enormous and just towers over Keanu Reeves, that in itself is funny. But right. It's just the juxtaposition that's amusing. Yeah. The fight scene itself is just as brutal as any other fight scene from any other movie. Especially considering how... He defeats him in the end.
Oh my, you're right. No, the way he defeats him is actually, like, hard to watch.
There's nothing funny about it. It's just, he's huge, and he towers over Keanu Reeves. And that's where the funny begins and ends.
I know, and I'm just saying, their willingness to be that kind of visually playful with it is what made me say that that scene and the wonderful scene where the ninjas come and kill two guys who were there to kill John Wick played a bit comedically, and I enjoyed that. But you're right. For the most part, the action is the same action it's always been.
But I think to suggest the movie's funny and playful is incorrect.
Oh, no. I'm just talking about those two scenes. And I'm just saying, when the rest of it had been entirely serious all the time, I noticed there was a playfulness even to the... even to the action this time in a couple of scenes. Guy being bitten in the groin for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know if that's playful though.
Okay.
I don't know if playful is really the word there. No, I think
exactly
it's just
the right word. Yeah.
They're just, yeah. I don't know. Again, like I just,
it's
keep
weird for me to
position over and over again.
Yes.
So,
no.
But,
well, no. And I mean, and I probably have used the term to say, the wrong term to try and express my point, which is it's three movies in, they're having fun with it.
Yeah.
And that's probably more of what I meant than actually trying to say comedic or playful is probably
because
what
it's
I was trying to get at.
It's still serious.
Still serious, still incredibly brutal action.
Yeah.
John Wick is still just shooting people in the face over and over again. Probably more times than he has to.
At the face.
God. Shit. Well, okay, so right from the start, right, I was kind of impressed that it's like they set a challenge for themselves where it's like, okay, this whole first 20 minutes of the movie, how little gunfighting can we get away with?
Mm-hmm.
And they do amazing work because it's the whole escape from New York sequence. It starts with this, as you say, upsettingly brutal fight scene in a library where he kills a man with a book.
Yep.
Right. And I don't know where Chinatown is in New York. I feel like maybe you can't get from the New York Public Library to Chinatown in 5 minutes on foot when you've been shot. But
I don't know. Honestly, I can't.
I can't say for sure. I don't know New York that well.
It matters, to be perfectly honest.
It's fine. But then that unbelievably epic, it's got to be close to 20 minutes that starts when he leaves the, where, again, proving the little point, right? It's like, this isn't going to be a gunfight sequence because he's got this gun, that he needs to shoot the doctor with. And the doctor, and it's pointedly a Derringer with only two bullets in it. And it's like, how are they going to do this? And then the doctor's like, you got to shoot me a second time. And then I'm like, oh, they're really going for it. They're going to make this just about hand-to-hand combat. And knife throwing. The knives going into those guys over and over again.
And the setup for that, like getting back to the fun part, the setup for that was really funny because they're punching each other and kicking each other. And then they realize like, oh, wait a minute. This is
there are walls of knives behind us. Oh, God.
And the audience loved it. Like, they laughed.
Oh, no. We got cheers and laughing. Yeah. Oh, it's a beautiful scene. And as you say, it's like, it's such a great punchline. Like, oh, right. And then there's the brutal stabbing. There's him pushing the knife into a man's head.
When it goes into the eye, everyone in the theater was just like, oh God.
I don't want to see that.
It's such a great experience to watch a movie. And everyone in the theater is into it, and you're all experiencing the same thing and reacting the same way. Because, like, I go to movies, and people laugh when it's not funny because they're nervous or uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
But this is just, like...
the whole audience feeling it at once, those moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the beautiful shot of him exhausted, having just won a knife fight against six guys, and there's one guy left alive, and he throws a hatchet into his head. All in the long shot. Like, all in the long shot. Oh. And then he murders some people with horses, and it's beautiful.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
What if he killed four guys with horses? What do you mean by that? I'll show you what I mean.
Yes, unexpected, and holy shit.
Oh. But yeah, it's like, it's such a great opening, because they're like, yes, we are known for these amazing gunfights and some of the wonderful close-up, you know, close-up jujitsu and a bit of judo and stuff like that, right? But we want to show that we can still do amazing action that looks completely different from the previous two movies. Mm-hmm. And it did. Like, the whole opening 20 minutes of this movie is something that you haven't seen in a John Wick movie before, but it is all visually consistent with everything we've seen before, and it's the action is just as intense and just as effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I loved it. Oh, God, that whole opening is incredible. And then we finally find out where he's from.
Yes, we do.
We get the backstory. He is Eastern European. He is an orphaned member of a Romani family. And he was trained to murder by Angelica Houston. Oh.
Yeah, all that is
pretty.
It's
pretty beautiful, right?
It's pretty good. Yes.
Oh man, it's a great little scene. We get more about the world of John Wick, where it's like that. There's all of these interlocking criminal organizations that all have their own codes.
Yeah.
They all have their own systems, and then above them is the high table, which is the world of assassins, like that have the rules that all of the different crime families have to abide by. Mm-hmm. And then above them is the old man of the mountain, who we meet in the desert.
Right. Who is neither old, nor does he live in the mountains.
But the original assassin leader was the old man of the mountain. So, you know, he's actually now a young guy who lives in a tent, but it's fine. I'm like, it's got to be someone famous, right? Who's it going to be? And then it's the guy from Wonder Woman. I love that. I love that guy. He was so good.
So John Wick escapes New York and travels to Casablanca, where he meets Halle Berry.
Yes.
And she has to be the worst part of this whole movie.
She definitely is.
She is not very good at her craft.
Nope.
I have to say, she tries so hard.
Yeah.
And she's so intense. And I just want someone to tell her to just dial it back.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to relax into your character. Because,
everything is just 100% focused on acting hard.
Yes.
I've got to let you know the emotion I'm feeling right now, John.
She's acting. I mean, it's not quite as hard as the acting in Route 666, but it's up there.
It's definitely up there.
Because that's the hardest acting you will
ever. The hardest acting man in show business. Dale Midkiff in Route 666. It's now on Netflix, so people can know what we're talking about.
Everybody can enjoy Route 666.
And the hardest acting man in show business.
So,
but you're right. It's that same kind of like forced intensity where it's like,
the words are there. The dialogue will do the work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to deliver your lines.
Oh, completely. Also, I think it's crazy. It's like how I kind of wasn't on her character's side because I'm like, you asked for an unbelievable favor and you're not willing to turn over a dog for that favor.
Right?
Like he's not being unreasonable. You're the one who's being unreasonable here, lady.
I guess she's concerned about how he'll treat the dog, which is a legitimate concern because he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's going to be kind to his pets.
Well, yeah, at the same time, like, it's that or risk your lives and kill 70 people. Like, maybe just let him have the dog.
Have the dog.
You can get another dog. Like, it's not like he said, as a proof of your fealty, murder this dog, kill your own dog to prove you're loyal to me. He just wanted a pet. It's fine.
But then, at the same time, I think she's pretty unreasonable when John Wick comes to her for help. Because you find out that he did her an enormous favor.
He got her daughter out of the life and so well hidden that no one will ever be able to find her. That's huge.
That's huge. And Halle Berry is like, yeah, I know you did this really big thing for me, but I still don't know if I'm going to help you.
Yeah, like, she's a complete jerk. You owe him as much as you could possibly owe anyone.
He has your marker. You don't get to argue with him about this.
He killed, like, when he got shown a marker, he's like, I really don't want to do this. And he's like, and his buddy's like, marker's a marker. He's like, okay, I'll go and kill a member of the High Table for you. Right? That was a huge deal.
That's how it works. You can't decide if and when someone gets to call in that favor.
Exactly. And I kind of liked, I like the opening up of the world that we see the forge where all of this stuff is
made. Yeah, where the gold coins are made and stuff like that.
The gold coins and the markers are made. I'm like, that made me happy. That this is the guy who runs the coining operation, the minting operation for the League of Assassins.
I do. So I like silly. How the world does open up a little bit more in this one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a weird place.
Oh, no. It's super strange.
And I also think it'd be a really easy cosplay to pull off to be one of the people who works in, like, the communication center.
Yeah, the people who work in record keeping, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of the alt girls cosplaying as 50s switchboard operators.
Yeah.
I love them. I love their whole thing. We know there's a guy working there now. We saw one guy, and it's someone I recognize, but I haven't looked up where I recognize him.
Oh, no, I don't know. I'm just like, I think I could pull that off. I'm going to give it a shot.
No, I think that's a great costume.
Tattooed as those ladies, and I never will be because I don't have the confidence to think that I could pull that off. But I probably could wear the outfit and feel pretty good about myself.
You know, Halloween is built around fake tattoos, right?
That's true.
You know that. Yeah. Just put on a couple of fake face and neck tattoos, put your hair up, put on the outfit. Everyone will know who you are immediately.
Good to go. Yep.
Yeah, no, it's a really good, and you're right. I would not be surprised if plenty of people are already doing that costume for Halloween, because it's such a great look.
Yeah.
I want to go back and check and see if it's the same women. Like, if they got the same women back for both movies.
The older lady is the same one.
Okay, but you don't know if any of the other people are.
I don't know, because they're, like, you don't really see a lot of them, but you just see the one who's, like, on the horn all the time.
Yes, no, and that is the same one.
She's the same one.
I think you're right. But it's just like everything about it, the switchboards, the papers, the stamps.
Too, yes. But it's like it works perfectly for them.
Oh, totally. Absolutely it does. And I mean, come on, there's a chalkboard. A chalkboard. And like, and as I'm looking, I'm like, John Wick, huh? I wonder, first off, I love that every assassin in the world has a plastic card with his name on it in case you have to slide in there. That's great. B, I'm like, what did the two Russian guys below John Wick do that they're both on that list of open bounties?
Who knows? This isn't their story.
No, it's not, but it's just an interesting, again, as you say, the more the world, this world opens up, the crazier and more interesting it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of love that about it. It's just it's such a strange yeah. series of movies. And then there's a ninja who runs a ninja school out of his sushi stand.
Out of the sushi stand.
In New York.
We're not there yet, though. We're still in Casablanca.
Oh, yeah, we're still in Casablanca.
So then.
Which has, I just want to say, I would call it the weakest fight scene in the movie.
I really liked that scene with the dogs. I thought that was amazing. I kind of felt like I was watching a video game.
Oh, it's absolutely a video
game. Which I'm okay with because still looked awesome. I'm like, if they ever get around to making the Uncharted live action movie, this is what it's going to look like. This is yeah. it right here.
Okay. I'll tell you why I called it the weakest in the movie. Right. Okay. And then, no, not because it's Halle Berry, because she was doing fine. The dogs were amazing. Hmm. But, all right, what I love about John Wick is what I love about the John Wick style is that it is not all in one shot, right? Usually. They do a couple of extended, really long takes, but they keep such a precise sense of location and movement hmm. that even though it's not one shot, right, it feels like a continuous experience. And because there are two heroes in that scene, they keep cutting between them, mm-hmm. and you have to reorient themselves. And that is the only part of it I didn't like. The stunts were still good. The blocking was still good. The action was still brutal. And as you said, the dogs were super fun, right? But the fact that then they would cut over to John Wick, like, I feel like if they had put a few more hours into blocking it out so they could naturally get Halle Berry to a point where she meets up with John, then they transfer the action over to John, follow him for a while, transfer the camera back to Halle, then I would have loved that scene, and I thought one of the high points of the movie. But because they cut to characters and you lose orientation, I didn't love it like I loved the other action scenes. Like, mechanically, it's a great action scene, but flow is so key to the John Wick action experience, mm-hmm. and that happens a little at the end, too, when they keep cutting between John and Lance Reddick.
I didn't have a huge problem with it.
Yeah.
To be honest.
You see what I mean about it breaking.
No, I understand
the flow.
I see what you mean. And your suggestion would have looked amazing. But at the same time, like while I was watching the scene,
You didn't think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really think about it.
Oh, it's still you're right. It's a magnificent scene. And if we compare it to action scenes in any other movie, it's obviously head and shoulders above them. I'm just saying specifically what I go to a John Wick movie, in addition to all of the other great stuff, is the flow of combat.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the one, like that and a bit of the Lance Reddick scene, I felt like it was breaking the flow of combat. It's far from a huge problem. It's not a deal breaker. I still loved the scene. But for me, when I say it's the weakest action scene in a John Wick movie, that's still an incredible action scene.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Yeah, so you're right. He goes to see the old man of the mountain in the desert, and he has to give up all of his old life because he's clinging to the memory of his wife.
Yes, but it's just like that was. This is a weird moment in the movie, though, and then it just kind of gets a little weirder from there, because he wants to live, he wants the contract, he wants to be non-excommunicado, or at the very least, wants to be left alone. And the old man of the mountain, he's like, well, you're either in or you're out. And if you're out, you're dead. So yeah. I guess that means you're in because you want to live so you can remember your wife. It's like, but he got out for his wife.
Yep. And honestly, kind of the old man of the mountain should have seen that this wasn't going to go well.
Right.
Just because it's like... He only got a, like, that's the wife is about his life outside being an assassin. He can't be an assassin and still remember his wife fondly because, and I mean, that's essentially what Ian McShane says to him in the next, you know, conversation scene of the movie. So, you know, the film kind of understands that, but it's like, dude, I just want to say to the old man of the mountain, you made him cut off his wedding ring finger when he just told you the only thing he cares about is the memory of his wife. You're doing this at cross purposes, guy.
What makes you think that this is going to go your way?
Like, Yeah, like you're creating the opposite effect you want to have by making him sacrifice his memory of his wife to preserve the memory of his wife.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, anyway, really,
he chops his finger off. Ugh.
I know, didn't want to watch that. And for the second time in the movie, he is burned with a brand.
Yeah, well, he's having a rough day.
Yeah, well, rough 2.5 days.
Rough couple of days. So so after that interlude, he heads back to New York, where an adjudicator from the Hightail has shown up. And I really liked her character.
We're going with their character, because that's the actor who had all that trouble with Billions, because they specifically are non-binary refused to be nominated for an Emmy because everyone loved their performance on Billions, but refused to be nominated for an Emmy because you have to be nominated as an actor or actress.
Okay. So I don't know who this person is. I didn't
I'm just telling you now. I didn't expect you to know that off the top.
Their preferred pronouns.
They're fantastic.
Okay. In this movie. They were amazing.
So good in this movie.
That character. So good. Yeah, like, just there to conduct business.
Yep.
That's it. And I loved that.
They have a ledger and are going to deal with the items on that ledger, and that is it. I'm like, Yeah, they were amazing. It's such a good performance, such a good character. Goes to see Angelica Houston, goes to see Lawrence Fishburne, and brings along with her an army of ninjas.
An army of ninjas, right, because...
Even I said her. God.
Well, character is female.
Yeah, the character is female, so I guess we're going to go... You're right. We can say in that case.
Because we're talking about the character, not...
We are talking about the character, not the actor.
So we can use she.
Yeah. Brings along an army of ninjas led by Mark Dacascos, who still looks fantastic. Like, this man has been doing action movies nonstop for 25 years. Still looking great. Way to go, Mark Dacascos.
So I thought Lawrence Fishburne was overdoing it a little bit.
Massively overdoing it. But then I went back and I watched his scene from John Wick 2, and I'm like, oh no, that's just how he's always decided to play the character, massively overdoing it.
But at the same time, but even, like, I think he's overdoing it a little bit with the performance, but then I think the character himself is a little overdone, I suppose, because he's like, because the adjudicator, she's like, there's some conversation about you're a king who's been dethroned, and he's like, I am the throne. I'm like, I think you're taking it a little too far, buddy. Like,
I know.
It's a bit much.
We know you run a hobo army under the sewers of the Brooklyn or wherever. He's the Bowery. The Bowery is his, right? But come on, dude. Like, they want you to turn over your organization. You work for people. Come on.
Yeah, you're not... I guess he envisions himself as being an independent.
Yeah.
And sort of operates outside the purview of the High Table, but works for
them.
And her
visit is designed to teach them that, no, that is not.
That's not the case here. We're here to rein you in. And he's like, bitch, nobody reins me in. And then he gets sliced up.
Yeah.
And doesn't die.
Of course not. I gotta say, I think it's possible that Jason Mantzoukas begged his way into being in this movie as lead hobo, because he's been talking about these movies on his various podcasts for like 3 years now. He talks about John Wick all the time. And I honestly think that it's like he's such a giant fan that they just, well, we need a homeless guy. He looks like a homeless guy.
He can play hobo.
He can play lead hobo. but it's like it's nice because he's just in the two scenes, but he's actually, you know, very funny in his first scene, and then it's like, oh, Jason Mantzoukas rescued John Wick. That's such a nice end moment.
I didn't really care for Lawrence Fishburne in the second movie. Like, I didn't really understand the purpose of the character.
I think we talked about it at the time, and it's like his purpose was to hang out with Keanu Reeves on set for 2 days.
Which is fine, but I think his presence just complicated the plot in a really needless way.
Yeah, you were especially really annoyed that they tried to make it so significant that he had a bullet gun with only 7 bullets in it. And I think your response was, yeah, but the first guy he shoots, he's just going to take his gun. Because that's what he always does.
He does. This is how that's how these people operate.
I know.
And, yeah.
Yeah, you were totally right.
To think this shit up. It's just,
yeah.
I've only got 7 bullets. He's got at least 13 in his magazine, so...
It's going to be fine. Yeah, let's just swap out that gun, which is what he did. Yeah. Oh, God, but I did enjoy the ninjas. They did a lot of great stuff with the ninjas.
Ninjas were great, funny in the sense that, like, you see two of them are coming at you from either side, but there's a guy up above that you didn't notice.
Oh, that they managed to hide completely in the background. The guy, it's like... that moment where they're on the fire escape, and it's like the slight pitter patter of ninjas in rain, and then it's like two ninjas coming inside, and oh, there's actually been a guy against the wall in the middle of the screen the whole time, and you didn't notice him.
Never saw him.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, all of the disappearing ninja stuff was fantastic.
So the adjudicator wants. Is it Ian McShane to like...
Ian McShane, yeah.
Give up being the manager of the New York Continental. And he's like, yeah, I don't think so. And everybody, I think, is really unreasonable.
Yep.
And then there's just like the battle for the Continental, essentially.
Yeah. Although you did miss one thing.
Part of the movie.
The motorcycle fight.
Yes, there is a motorcycle fight and holy shit.
Oh my God. And I know it was actually a bunch of takes. And they used computers to make it look like one take, but oh my God.
Yeah.
The first half of that fight is all just this seeming to be one unending fight of weaving and sword slashing and gunfighting and a man having his arm cut off and having it fall into the spokes of his motorcycle.
Just like all those motorcycle crashes. It's like,
oh,
brutal shit right there.
It's
good thing
so hard to watch.
Which,
I know.
I couldn't get over that. I'm like, bridge closed. I'm like, oh, this is convenient.
Yeah, and incredibly convenient that at 8 o'clock in New York City, they've closed a bridge just so they can have a motorcycle chase on it. Oh, it's so good. But yeah, it's an amazing scene that has to be seen to be believed. Because it's like, I saw clips of it in the trailer. But when you watch it all play out as one just incredibly long shot of this amazing chase, it's some of the best action you've seen. Just like full stop.
Yeah. No, that is a great chase and fight.
Yeah. And then they get to the Continental and Mark Dacascos reveals himself to be, like everyone else, a John Wick fanboy.
There are so many of them in this movie. It's pretty funny.
Everybody loves this guy.
Look, he's Baba Yaga. He's a legend.
Yeah. Oh my God. And then they have, as you say, the giant fight for the Continental, right? They deconsecrate.
Yes, deconsecrate.
Keeping up the, it's like as if all of the Catholic Church stuff wasn't obvious enough. Right. They deconsecrate it.
I'm like, okay, Ian McShane. So like, you've been managing the Continental for like 40 years or whatever for the high table and they deconsecrate your hotel. And it's like, well, you could just turn this into a public hotel and still make bank.
They could, but I think the implication is there that they might also kill him. You know, like they might also be killing him afterwards. And then it's not a joke per se, but in one of the funniest, premises in the film is, what does John Wick do against people who are bulletproof? Because it's like suddenly he can't just shoot everybody. They're all wearing armor.
Well, he found a way to shoot them.
He still found a way to shoot them, bending their neck to the side and shooting them in the neck, or opening their visor manually and shooting them in the eyes.
Yes.
But the desperation of this fight scene, as he keeps like shooting people in the head and having them dazed and stumble back, and then he has to move on to the next guy and then go back to the first guy over and over and over again. Wow. Oh, it's such a creative fight. Like, then eventually they get themselves some armor-piercing shotguns and all works out. But the creativity of him fighting people he can't shoot to death is so much fun. I hadn't seen that before. Way to go, John Wick.
Yeah, that was good.
Didn't think it was going to go there. It was amazing to watch.
And I just liked how unfazed the soldiers were.
Yes.
when they're getting shot at, they're like, they still maintain formation. And I'm
Yep.
like, this is amazing. This is
Yeah,
so
no.
great right now, what I'm seeing.
Yeah. And it's like they're trained for this. They know they're here in perfect armor. They know they're going to get shot. That's not the problem. Just do your job.
Yeah.
And
Don't worry
they're
about
all.
getting shot. You're here to shoot someone. Focus on that.
Yeah, they're all like a team of Terminators, and it's a beautiful sequence. Just FYI, if you're photosensitive, you will get a migraine from watching the scene. Because they turn off all the lights, and then they start doing this green strobe effect, and Lazy Writer, like, stomach sick, serious behind the eyes migraine, just terrible 5 minutes after the movie was over. She's like, totally worth it. It's an amazing scene.
But
But
I
if you're
have to go
watching,
lie down in a dark room.
if you're gonna watch this movie with someone who is photosensitive, either watch it in a completely bright room, right? Or if you're gonna see it in theaters, tell the person who is gonna be watching the movie that at a certain point, Lance Reddick is gonna shut off the lights in the hotel. Tell them to close their eyes, and it's safe to open their eyes when we go back to Ian McShane. And it's like, you're gonna miss an amazing 5 minute shootout, but you will be saved a migraine if you're in the theaters. Yeah, because it is very migraine seizure triggering that scene. But it's an amazing scene.
Yes.
Oh, so good. And then we get to the grand finale, John Wick's fight with an army of ninjas. I'm gonna ask you a question. I want you to tell me if I've guessed right.
Right.
Was Keanu Reeves' stuntman trying to set the record for most glass walls thrown through in a single film?
I'd have to say yes. Yeah.
He's gotta be, right?
So many glass walls broken.
Over and over, and it's always
To the
him
point where,
getting
like,
thrown
it
through
turns
them.
into a joke partway through. But they're just
Yes.
slamming it into these glass walls.
They keep kicking him through glass walls.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, and the beating he takes in this scene that goes on, he
On,
just
it just
keeps
goes
getting
on.
kicked. It's so brutal, and he
But
keeps
still, but
getting
he's
kicked
fighting like two
harder
John
and
Wick
harder.
fanboys.
I know.
And they're
When
like,
he's fighting the
such,
Salat knife fighter guys, oh
he's just
my
like, oh,
God.
such an honor to fight with you. This is like a real dream come true for us. And then at one point, he's like, okay, he's like, just give me a minute. Just give me a minute. It's okay. It's okay. I'm like, you're here to fight me. I'm going to give you a really good fight. Just like one second.
Just give me a second.
Just give me a second.
Takes off his belt.
And then just annihilates these two guys.
Brutally annihilates them. Oh, and then you get the final battle with Mark Dacascos, which is amazing because it's a full-on ninja fight scene where characters are constantly
Disappearing.
disappearing and
Yeah.
reappearing.
I was waiting for someone to like fly out an actual window.
Oh, I know. I'm like, Mark
This is so
Dacascos going
much
out a
mess
window,
in that
right?
room. I'm like, one of these is an outside window.
Yep. Oh yeah, no, all the entire sides. They've got these great big, you can see across the street. You know someone's going out a window. It never happens.
Friends.
And
Yeah.
like, it's so crazy. Yeah, I was very surprised that no one ever actually went out a window in
Yeah.
this movie. Like, it was very peculiar.
That's a good way to subvert expectations.
That is a great way to subvert expectations. Yeah, because like he could have thrown one of the earlier guys, the ninjas, out the window, but at the same time, like he could have thrown Mark Dacascos at a window, but the end, Mark Dacascos' death is so good.
I'll be a, he's like, I'll catch you later.
No,
It's
you
just like
won't.
the Black Knight, merely a flesh wound.
I know. Oh, sword goes all the way through him, and they're sitting up and have a chat, and then that's it for Mark Dacascos. Oh no, I mean these guys, they're the number one in action. Like, you don't go to anyone else for the best in action than the John Wick movies. Like, there's bigger action. Like, there's more high stakes, more bombastic action, but you're not gonna get better action than these movies. And then at the end of the movie, he gets betrayed by Ian McShane.
I did not see that coming. I was
I was surprised.
waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, oh, did they plan this ahead of time? It's like, nope.
Nope.
Nope. I'm like, this is a actually pretty upsetting turn of events.
Yeah, because Ian McShane's like, I love you, John, but
But I love my hotel
it's
more.
you. I love my hotel more. It's you or me. I guess I'm gonna have to shoot you a bunch.
Holy shit.
It was a brutal way to end the movie, and I'm like, oh, so this is the Empire Strikes Back of this
Well, here's
series.
the thing though. So like, obviously, this, we're just waiting for number four now, where John Wick just, you know, has it in for the high table and is just going to kill everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to wonder, like, Ian McShane finds out at the end of the movie that John Wick potentially survived his fall and being shot a bunch of times. It's like, he has to know that John Wick is coming for him. Like, everybody has to know that John Wick is coming for them.
Yep.
And everybody has to know that you're not going to survive this.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, like, I have to wonder what people are thinking when they go up against him. Because he was a legend when he retired. And now he came out of retirement and has, like, superseded his own legend.
I know.
So it's like, what do you think is going to happen now?
Exactly.
Like, you are not going to survive this.
It's gonna, there's going to be a time to make a deal. And it's like, it's not going to be with Ian McShane. But that's the thing. It's like, he, in that moment, he knows he can't cross the high table, right? Mm. He knows he can't full on cross the high table.
But he can't make
they will get him eventually.
John Wick, because he fucking.
But the thing is, he's honestly thinking he can kill John Wick. And that's his mistake in that moment.
But this is, I think this is a problem throughout the entire, not that. Like, I'm not criticizing John Wick 3. I really loved it.
Of course. It's an amazing movie.
Everybody's mistake is that they think they can take him on. It's like, you have to know that you can't.
Yeah. Maybe just let him go.
There's a, like, you have to reach this point where you're like, you know what? He's better than me.
Yeah. And well, but didn't we have that conversation in the second movie? Where it's like, okay, he killed your sister. Let him go.
Go.
Yeah. He's like, no, you killed my sister, so I gotta kill you too. I mean, that's just how it works, family. I'm not going to get respect in the Gamora anymore if I don't get the guy to kill the sister.
Yeah, like, I get that and all, but at the same, you're not going to beat me.
You're not going to beat me, so just let me go.
Deep in your heart of hearts.
Yep.
You know you're going to lose this fight.
Well, they're arrogant. That's the thing. If they weren't arrogant, they wouldn't have become super criminals. You know? I think on some level, that's part of it. It's like arrogance comes with the territory.
I think Willem Dafoe in the first movie, he wasn't super arrogant, and he was still super criminal.
Well, no, but he was just another assassin.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't management. He was just another assassin. He's one of the guys who trained John Wick, and he gets who John Wick is, and that's why he's not going to cross John Wick.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the guy, the guy whose son John Wick was going to kill, he was arrogant. Yeah.
But he understood, like, once he found out it was John Wick, he's like, well, fuck. And, like, kind of did what he could, like, A, to save his son, but also to be like, look, you know, like, my son did something really stupid, but, like, understands that, like, John Wick is going to kill his son and he can't prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
But he could prevent John Wick from coming after him. He makes the decision
not to.
And it's like, oh, you should be better than this.
Which is why that scene, who was his brother in the second one?
Oh,
was it Peter Stormare as the brother in the second one?
I really don't.
But it's, which is why I love that scene in the second one where John Wick comes to his brother. It's like, I killed your brother. I killed your nephew. They came at me first. Are we good? And the brother's like, we're good. And John Wick leaves. Yeah. There is modeled behavior. There is a way to do this.
Everybody can be reasonable, but people are choosing not to be. And it's like, again, you have to know that you're making a bad decision.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, there's one guy in the series that made a good decision once. The only guy who ever made a decision, good decision, to just don't cross John Wick. Just try that.
I'm so curious about the next chapter because, again, like, the high table and everybody has to know that John Wick's gunning for them. And they also have to know that he's never failed. And he's not going to start now.
He shot up your minting facility.
He shot up your army. So
what
the fuck do you think you're going to do?
Yeah, maybe just let him go. Maybe he wants to start a farm somewhere.
Just leave the man alone. Honestly.
Well, you know what? I don't know what the fourth movie is. It's probably not going to be John Wick Gets Left Alone. As entertaining as that would be, it's probably not the plot of the next movie.
No, definitely not. It's just him and Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, him and Lawrence Fishburne, Scarface Lawrence Fishburne, having an awesome adventure.
Hmm.
I honestly can't wait for it. I hope Lawrence Fishburne manages to get more than a day off work this time, though. It's like, in both of these movies, he's only been on set for like 2 days. Yeah. I'm like, I want a ton of Lawrence Fishburne next time. I know you got a sitcom. I know you're a busy man, but fit it into the schedule, Lawrence. You're the best.
Right. Film. Or maybe, hey guys, maybe film a movie in the summertime.
That could work. Or, you know, just, here's a pitch. Get a guy in one of those, gray pockmark suits.
Mocap suit.
Right? To be a motion cap suit, a motion capture suit, right? Mocap suit to be on set. And then Lawrence Fishburne in the summer green screens his whole performance.
That's going to look terrible.
That actually would look terrible.
That is not going to work.
Yeah, I just want more Lawrence Fishburne. And you're right, he's massively over the top. So I think if he was in a whole movie, he would have to dial that back a little.
Yeah.
Or it would get exhausting. Yes. Although, as you said, Halle Berry didn't. So, you know, maybe Lawrence Fishburne wouldn't either.
I don't know. Again, I feel like his character kind of gums up the works.
A little. So. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yeah.
All right. So that was John Wick 3. It's a masterpiece.
Yep.
If there were stunt Oscars, it would take them all.
There should be. Watching the movie, or maybe I was watching the credits, I'm like, they should get an Oscar. There should be Oscars for stunts.
I don't understand how there aren't.
And maybe if like, there were.
That is no disrespect to sound effects editing. Your work is important.
Yes.
So is stunt design. Like, so is stunt choreography.
Because we've seen some pretty friggin' awesome stunts.
Yeah.
And I feel like if there were an Oscar for stunt, I'm sure there are awards out there for stunts and we just don't know about them.
Because they're like technical Oscars.
But if there were like a prestige, let's call it Oscar for stunts.
Yeah.
Maybe we'd see.
People would care about the Oscars again?
Well, I certainly would. And maybe we'd start seeing more about his stunts. And if they made a point of not counting out Oscars to movies with intensified continuity.
Yeah, maybe we'd start pushing people in the right direction. Exactly. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess we're going to call it there. Do you have any narcissism you would like to watch?
Just more episodes of True North Crime and Chicks and Dicks. Actually, no, that's a lie because I'm going away. So it's going to be a little while before we have more episodes of True North Crime and Chicks and Dicks.
But to salve your need for new content while she's gone, check out Profiling Criminal Minds, the internet's only Criminal Minds podcast, mm-hmm. where we talk Criminal Minds and other profiling related TV and movies and books.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be a lot of fun. And of course, Vargelon.com for all your written Criminal Minds needs, and Hidden Object Guru for video game things.
You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there. Tell us about how much you love John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And if you're listening on a podcast app, be sure to, you can leave us a comment there if you like, or give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And it helps other people like you find us.
Merci beaucoup. As always, until next time, I want to say I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.